Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey everyone, welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast between books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And it's the end of the month, so we're here to discuss our May book club pick, The Leavers by Lisa Ko. And to help us discuss this book, well, we're bringing back book club member Lily Rugo. Hey Lily, how's it going?
Hello. All right.
Lily is coming at us.
Oh, that's right. Happy APAM.
Happy APAM.
It shouldn't be APAM by the time this podcast releases. It's Asian American Heritage Month every month in this book club.
Thank you, Lily. Lily's coming at us all the way from Boston, where she just graduated from Emerson University.
Congratulations.
College, but yes, thank you.
College, my bad. And yeah, so she's looking for a job. So if anyone's looking to hire a talented writer / aspiring podcaster,
as her former editor, I can vouch for her writing skills.
Oh my god, you guys were both my bosses at some point.
I know, isn't that circle of life?
Yeah.
You know?
But we asked Lily to come discuss this book, not only because she's read it before, but also because she has a very personal connection to the themes of the book. So we're happy to have Lily on board with us as we discuss The Leavers. Standard spoiler warning, we will be discussing key plot points within the book, and it is a really good book. So if you plan on reading The Leavers, now's the time to pause and read the book and come back and join us when you're done.
All right. So shall we start with the book jacket description?
Yeah. Domingo's mother, Polly, an undocumented Chinese immigrant, goes to her job at a nail salon and never comes home. No one can find any trace of her. With his mother gone, 11-year-old Deming is left mystified and bereft. Eventually adopted by a pair of well-meaning white professors, Deming is moved from the Bronx to a small town upstate and renamed Daniel Wilkinson. But far from all he's ever known, Daniel struggles to reconcile his adoptive parents' desire that he assimilate with his memories of his mother and the community he left behind.
All right, so I read this book about a year ago, and I just kind of skim through parts of it for the second read for mm-hmm. this discussion. So I know Lily read it I don't know when.
Yeah, a few months ago earlier in the year,
so pretty recent compared to my reading experience. And I know Marvin finished it like last week.
I read it over the month.
Okay,
and
so
I finished this past week.
So Marvin, I remember you saying that the book was a lot lighter than you thought it would be.
So the story itself was different than what I expected. And, you know, that's my fault for assuming what the book was going to be, because the way it was set up, it sounded like it was going to be more of like about the struggle of these two people trying to reunite. And while that is a key part of the story, it isn't the central conflict.
Right? Yeah. This book really subverts a lot of known themes mm-hmm. in the immigrant story. And also, like, we're probably going to talk about this later. Like, it really flips on the model minority story as well, because neither Polly or Daniel are seen as model minorities.
And it's not even about mm-hmm. them finding success as model minorities in America. Like, some of the characters do find success, but it's not because of the American system. It's because of their own will to survive.
Their own grit.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Lily? I know it's been a couple of months, but Do you remember your first impression of the book or how it kind of messed with your expectations, should I say?
I mean, I remember I really liked it. I read it at the end of like two other like heavier books. It was after Little Fires Everywhere and then Tea Girl to Hummingbird Lane. So this was like the third of just like kind of heavy books. But it was good. And I thought it would be more about the adoption. I was surprised by how much we've learned about Polly and her life.
Yeah. The story is told through two perspectives, dual perspectives. You get, I think, two-thirds of it is through Deming or Daniel's perspective. And apologies. I'm going to be alternating between Deming and Dumming, which is, I think, is the actual pronunciation, just because...
Lily and I had no idea what the pronunciation were.
Chinese.
We're just like,
and,
I say it like it's D-A. I said like Dumming.
I think it's Dumming, but it might be Dumming. Or the, people who know Chinese know that like the same word can be pronounced multiple times, multiple ways. So I don't think they ever go into what the words actually mean in the story, unless I totally missed that part. So I can't vouch for the actual pronunciation.
We never saw the pinyin.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, so I did some digging and I found out that The Leavers was inspired by an actual real life story. I mean, the whole undocumented immigrant story is, mm-hmm. you know, vast and diverse, but it was
very current.
And very current. It's always current. Immigration and undocumented immigration is always a current event in America because it's America. But yeah, it was inspired by this one specific story back in 2009, and it was this Chinese woman who was caught by ICE when she was going to Florida for a new job, which is kind of mentioned briefly in The Leavers, because the excuse that Leon gives to Deming is that his mom went to go find work in Florida. So that little tidbit is from the actual story. But the Chinese woman, I think her name was Xu Ping Zhang. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I'm gonna go for it.
But she was in solitary confinement for a year and a half, and because she had serious mental illness, she had a really hard time in detention. And her son, who was 8 or 9 at the time, he was placed in foster care. Because, you know, separation. So it is a story that... The Leavers is very much taking elements from that one specific story. Mm-hmm. But as you can tell...
I mean, as a lot of fiction are, like, authors are inspired by different ways, different stories.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Like completely different characters, of course. Yeah. And I do know that Lisa Koh, it took her a great number of years to finish this book. It started off as a short story and... After drafts and drafts and drafts, she finally made it into a novel. So it is a book that went through a lot of... It went through a long journey. And I think it was... I think you can see the fruits of her efforts.
So what were your thoughts about it, Reba? Your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts? Yeah. Okay, so I thought this book was going to focus more on Deming or Daniel. I'm not sure I'm going to alternate between those two names. But I was really surprised by how much of the book focused on Polly, and not so much like on Polly's like current perspective. It would cut to flashbacks, and you would like learn about how like where she started, like which village she grew up in, and just the circumstance of like why and how she came to America.
I mean, it's the reason I say it's current because immigrants and undocumented workers and. They're still a part of the headlines today, and the way that society views immigrants is very dehumanized, right? You see them as
numbers.
These people are coming to take your jobs, leech out the system, blah, blah, blah. But they're like, there's statistics and numbers. And what you don't see are the story behind why they're doing it. It's not just because they want to come and work. It's why do they want to come and work? And the story talks a lot about, and I forgot what's the term for it, but like sending money back home, right? For a lot of immigrants, especially from poor countries where there are no jobs, working like 6 months in like the States in, like, say, on a farm or for a cruise ship, you'll make enough money to support your, like, whole families for a year.
And also, like, with Polly, like, her reason for wanting to come to America, it was a situation that you don't really hear about that often, because she came to America to get an abortion. Like I remember she wanted an abortion, and she came to America, and she finds out that they don't abort 7-month fetuses.
I don't think she came for an abortion.
I thought she was.
So Polly's situation, while not commonly heard, is actually, I think, more common than you think, especially within China during that time when the one-child policy was still very much in effect. Like, she wanted to leave for America because if she had stayed, she would have been fined like crazy if she ended up having the baby. She didn't end up wanting to get an abortion until maybe at least a couple months into working in the States.
Because I remember
for a while, she was just hoping she would miscarriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, like for me, Polly was a big surprise. And also, like, you know, we've read books where immigrant mothers, they like do whatever it takes to support their kid, right?
Yeah.
But this happened with What Lies Between Us as well. Like, you get a mother who is not the quote unquote perfect image of a mother. And I really liked how Polly, like, you can understand like where her choices came from. And how like necessity and her like want for freedom, like that line is very blurred. And just how unlikable she was at some points in the story. I'm like, dang, lady, like, you are not the greatest mother of the year. But
and I mean, that was part of the message behind last month's book too. What Lies Between Us is like, mothers get so much pressure put upon them to be perfect. And I mean, this is like the entire theme of Ali Wong's latest comedy special, right? About just talking about the first year of motherhood for her and how like it's not glamorous, and there's just so much pressure to be like, for mothers to be the best mom. Whereas like, there was actually a part in this in the story where she was talking about how Leon, her fiance, all he had to do was take the kids out and be present, and he's like the best father already. People praise him for being a good dad. Mm-hmm. And she has to do all this stuff just to be an adequate mom.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I really liked the, like, in the opening chapters, you kind of get a glimpse of what Deming and his mother's relationship is like, which is like kind of humorous. Like, there's a lot of like witty banter here and there, and like it's endearing to see how close they are. And I mean, that setup is there because a whole bunch of a whole bunch of shit happens after that. So you need to like establish like this really close bond that he has with his mother, which his adoptive parents try to erase. Mm-hmm. Like, try to erase his close bond with his birth mother, and also his time spent in the Bronx and his time with like with his Chinese friends, like all of that experience, like they want him to kind of bury within himself and kind of like start anew.
And this, like, I think Lily in our pre-discussion called it savior complex, is something that, and I guess to let listeners know, Lily herself is a Chinese adoptee who grew up with a white family, so she has that perspective going for her.
Heyo.
I think we can talk about, I want to talk about that like maybe later on,
maybe later on.
We're like wrapping up. But I think one of the key like themes that I think the book sets up is just how, in the end, like how similar they both are. And I think The Leavers as a title is, it's about those, them two, like the, like Deming and Polly. They're both leavers. That's like this, that's their personality. That's their, you know, that's their,
Because you have Polly leaving China, and then eventually she has to send Deming back to China to be under the care of her father. Mm-hmm. And then you have Deming, who leaves China as like, I don't know how old he is, but he's like a kid.
He's like 5 or 6.
He's like 5 or 6. And he comes and he comes back to America. And then he goes back to China as an adult. So like, you have these two characters who are constantly...
Yeah.
going back and forth, and they don't really have like a home. Home is kind of like the last place that they left.
Yeah, like the leavers to me means that they're people who never feel comfortable or set where they are. And this manifests in Polly as like this ambition to travel and see the world and, you know, be more than what society wants her to be. And it manifests in Deming or Daniel as like this like constant imposter syndrome, like feeling he doesn't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I'm trying to like, because we like talked about a lot of things. I'm trying to see where to bounce off next to. I guess we can start off with the, like, Polly disappears.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to like to summarize.
We don't have to summarize story, that. But yeah. I thought it was. Okay, wait, go ahead.
And so the main conflict for the story starts when, like, Polly doesn't come back from work, right? Like, the first, like, I don't think this happens until like the end of the first chapter or the second chapter.
It's very quick.
It takes a while, I think, until you get to the point where.
Oh.
Right. Because you have Polly wants to move to Florida.
Right.
And the first time you hear about that, it's from Deming's perspectives, which is like, why I don't want to leave. Why is my mom doing this? And then like, and then having his mom disappear and having that like kind of guilt that the last, pretty much the last interaction with her was antagonistic and feeling that it was his fault.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I thought it was really, like, it was really interesting because when Polly disappears, like, Deming immediately thinks, like, oh, what if she's, like, a victim of a crime? Yeah. What if, like, she ends up, like, as one of those bodies from, like, CSI or Criminal Minds? And like, it doesn't really occur to him that, like, she was arrested for being an undocumented immigrant. Like, that doesn't, like...
Well, it doesn't occur to anybody. I think
I think it occurs to the adults like Leon and Vivian, but of course, like with Deming, like he is like he lives in the Bronx. It's not Chinatown. It's not Flushing, but there are plenty of Chinese people in his neighborhood, and it doesn't really occur to them that, you know, they're not wanted, quote unquote wanted, in this country. There is a lot of antagonistic feelings toward undocumented immigrants, and when you're that young, obviously you don't even think about your parents being taken from you.
I feel like that whole section, you can feel the tenseness of like, this is what a child must feel like when someone close to them just disappears.
And just like the way that no one, like Leon and Vivian, like no one explains what happened or what possibly happened. Like Vivian does her best, like taking care of Michael and Deming for a little bit.
Well, and then she just drops him off without telling him.
And then she just drops him off. She's like, foster care. And it's like, wow, that was like without any warning. No wonder this kid had like traumatic experience. Like after that, it's.
And I mean, if you read the book, Jackie, you knew what happened to his mother, but she doesn't really show up till like way later, so you just have his perspective,
and like Deming really has a hard time adjusting. Nope, like you can't blame him for not being able
he
to
has
adjust.
Some like PTSD after it happens.
And it's interesting because we talked about names, like Deming's the interesting thing about one of the things about the book is Deming's parts, like his POV is always in third person. And the omnipresent narrator refers to him as Deming until a certain point where he turns from Deming to Daniel. And that isn't when he first arrives at the Wilkinson's place. I thought that was interesting. Like, he doesn't really become Daniel until after him and Angel take that trip back home.
Right. He realizes he has nowhere else to go. That's home now.
Yeah. He decides that he needs to forget about Deming and that life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's actually a quote that I wrote down that really sums up, Daniel being lost and trying to find his identity. And it goes, Daniel was malleable, everyone and no one, a collector of moods, a careful observer of the right thing to say. He watched other people's reactions before deciding on his own. He could be fun or serious or whatever was most strategic, whoever you wanted him to be.
So, yeah, so adult Daniel or young adult Daniel is kind of...
He's a college dropout. He has a gambling addiction.
He has issues.
He has debt.
Yeah.
Like he's in a band, but it's not like a cool band.
Well, it is a cool band.
Yeah, it's not a healthy band.
It is a cool band. He just doesn't like see himself as cool. We're jumping around, but I think there's a quote from like Roland, his best friend. Everyone thinks you're cool but you.
Mm. It's been a while, but
and I think that's the thing. Like, when he is his best self, he is like amazing. He's an amazing guitarist. Like, he has synesthesia. Like, he can see music.
Oh, he sees colors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he can see music. Yeah. I forgot about that one detail.
And so he's like a naturally gifted musician, but he just like
he has this huge imposter syndrome.
Yeah,
and like,
which is so real.
Yeah, it's so real. Like,
and yeah, I think that's. I mean. Daniel, you can see why he becomes this way, because he's constantly afraid everyone he loves will leave him.
Yeah, there's abandonment issues.
Yeah, there's always like this arm length distance between him and all of his friends after he became Daniel.
Lily, I'm wondering what Daniel's character, like, what did you, how did you react? What did you see while reading the story?
I mean, like, I don't remember. At first I thought he was kind of like, plain. Like, at first I thought he was kind of boring, but I think that was just because of the way he was written, and that point of view was still, he was just kind of like a little bit of shell-shocked and trying to figure things out. And then I remember like recognizing some of the stuff that he went through, or like everyone's like, why do you act like this? And I was like, I know why. I'm not sure if that's because I was a reader and I knew like all the stuff that happened beforehand, or because like I related as an adoptee, but there was a lot of like, yeah, I knew why he was the way he was. I could relate to that. Stuff like that. But yeah, I remember thinking he was kind of boring at first until you saw more of his like college age ish when you saw that like how the years had affected him up to that point.
Yeah, and you were adopted as a baby, right? So your story is closer with Daniel, one of Daniel's best friends, Angels, who's I guess family friends. So I guess we can talk about his adoptive family for a little bit. And just
like the contrast between Daniel and Angel.
Yeah, or just the parents for some, like the moment that you realize that, oh, like the Wilkinson's friends also adopted Chinese babies. It kind of
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's
Adopted at the same, I know that the same age, but were they adopted? No, because she was adopted as an infant.
Yeah, yeah. She was adopted as an infant.
Yeah.
They're around the same
kind
age.
Kind of like a collection. They wanted one too.
Well, yeah, and you know, they explain it's because they were older, it was harder for them to adopt an infant. So basically only like they could only adopt older kids who were also like less. Remember, I think it was either Kay or Peter is his dad's name.
Yeah.
I forgot what exactly he said, but basically like we're both unwanted in the system.
Yeah.
So that's how we end up together.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Deming is much older. I mean, he's 11 when he gets adopted. And that is much older than most stories about Chinese-American adoptees that we read in fiction. Mm-hmm.
And was it the mom or the dad? Was it Kay or Pete that wanted to return him after day one? Like, someone said, we can take him back, right?
I remember, because, that was another thing that, like, oh, my God, Deming went through some shit. He overheard his adoptive parents being like, I don't know if this is working. Or it's like, it's okay, that's why we fostered him. It's a trial. We can always, like, try again. And, like, this poor child.
I think it was interesting that, like, while his birth mom never really put a lot of pressure on him, it was his adoptive parents that, like, wanted to shape him in their image. Like, you're going to school.
They had, like, a picture of, like, an ideal American boy, right? And I actually have a quote, and it says, he recalled how she and Peter had insisted on English, his new name, the right education. How better and more hinged on their ideas of success, their plans. Mama, Chinese, the Bronx, Deming, they had never been enough. He shivered, and for a brief horrible moment, he could see himself the way he realized they saw him. as someone who needed to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
savior complex.
Savior complex. Shall we get into that since we've mentioned it a couple times?
I mean, so that passage comes from the second to last chapter, I think, or the last chapter. It was after he had gone to China to find his mom, and we'll talk about that later on as well. But he comes back with a, like, he still has anxieties, but they're much less about abandonment and more just about personal worth, which is normal for, I guess, artists his age. He comes back with, I guess, a little bit more perspective, and he can see what his parents thought of him.
I don't want to say that, like, he saw his adoptive parents for what they were, but he understood more about, like, their intentions when they first adopted him and stuff like that. But it's also, that's not to say that, like, I don't think he necessarily had a bad relationship with the Wilkinsons, with his adoptive parents.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely did care, he does care about them, and he sees them as, like, his parental figures. But yeah.
Yeah, I think
it's complicated.
I do want to mention how, like with his adoptee friend, Angel, she's growing up in New York City, Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
where, like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say colorblind, but, like, it is, you see way more diversity, not just in color, but, like, also in sexuality and religion. So, like, she's growing up in a place where, you know, her skin, her race isn't that much of a big deal.
Has like three adoptee friends, two named Lily.
Yeah, well, that was a funny
okay there's something in the water with Chinese adoptees. We're all named Lily, I swear to God.
Lily or Jade. but like with Daniel, he's growing up in like white suburbia. He is like the only Asian kid, I think.
Yeah,
like I don't mm-hmm. remember if there was another Asian kid like that comes to his school, but I do remember him saying how, like, in the city he was just another kid, mm-hmm. but then as soon as he moves into this new town, he is like everyone kind of stares at him from the corner of their eye, and it's like, oh, this is what it feels like to not be part of the majority.
I mean, we see that with his parents, because his parents obviously has something against the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like when he moves back to Manhattan, they think he's throwing his life away.
How fucked up was that Chinese restaurant scene?
We alluded on this on the last episode, but I thought it was funny because I've seen this interaction before.
I felt bad for both sides. Like, I got why it was funny, but I was also kind of annoyed that, like, not gonna lie, these folks don't know any better, so, like, they're gonna go for, like, the first thing that they saw. So, like, I felt bad for them more than as laughing at them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing because I've been through, like, I've been taken to places before where, you know, my host was very like, this is me, authentic Chinese food, you're gonna love it, and I'm like, I love this orange chicken. It's great. But this was in the book the first time that the Wilkinsons take Daniel at this point to go, or he's still Deming, I think.
He's still Deming at this
identifies
point.
As Deming to meet their, I guess, their good friends who are also professors who teach in New York, and their daughter, who's his age, Angel. And Angel was adopted as, and there's this really almost sad exchange when Deming introduces himself to Angel in Chinese.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't speak Chinese.
It was a very poignant moment. I was like, oh man, it's funny because I feel like with, like, you can't, not every adoptee has like the same experience, obviously, but it was just like very two different, like, opposite sides of the adoptee experience, I think, that they just like collided in that one moment, and I was like, wow. Like,
mm-hmm.
And Angel's family also has good intentions too, and you just, I don't know, when someone says like, oh, we think it's great to make sure that Angel stays in touch with her roots, and you're taking her to like Chinatown Chinese food. It's like how Lily says, it's like you kind of feel bad for both sides because they're both kind of, one side's woefully misinformed, the other side's gonna get like this misinformed idea of their quote-unquote heritage.
I mean, it's what you got.
And like a hidden story in here is Angel's story. Like she is a secondary character, but you learn through their interactions later on that she also grew up to be a problem child, right? She fights with her mom all the time. She ended up becoming a, what major was she? Like a history major or something? She ended up like not following her parents' plan for her as well.
Yeah.
Right.
I think with like both families though, like they do have good intentions, but they also like put on this like, I don't want to say show, but it's just like, oh, like, look at how much we're providing for you. Look at how, like, how many opportunities are open for you because of, like, because of the privilege that we wield, because of the money that we make. And, you know, like, I feel like that puts, like, an additional pressure on their children, you know? It's like, oh, like, if I don't meet their expectations, then, like, it makes me look ungrateful, not just to
them. Adoptees are always expected to be grateful. That's one thing I've heard through like talks and other books and like my own experiences. We're always expected to be grateful.
Yeah. And that goes back to the very last thing the book says about Daniel's parents, which is, yeah, like they think they saved him. And that's why he should be grateful. Mm. Right.
He is, but like he shouldn't be reminded that he should be or that he needs to be, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he eventually goes to China to find his mom because his friend Michael
finds him on Facebook.
Oh, surprise.
Okay, I love Michael, by the way.
Michael is probably there.
He was a good kid. I loved him.
I feel like Michael, like this book is called The Leavers, but Michael can be categorized as a stayer. Like he stayed. He was a freaking anchor in this book.
Yeah.
He was so upset when we should get into Michael and the whole trip to China thing.
So Michael finds Daniel on Facebook and he's not excited that he got found by Michael, but he's also curious.
Well, yeah, because right. Michael's like, I want to talk to you about like your mom.
Yeah.
And of course, like he's going to come and at least talk to Michael. And this is when he like kind of finds out what happened to his mom. Like, you know.
Piece by piece. So he goes to Michael's place with his mom, Vivian, who they used to live together in the Bronx. And through that, he's able to trace. He's given the phone number to his uncle, Leon, who is his mom's ex-fiance, and eventually decides to just go.
Yeah, like why not? I mean, he had like a gambling debt and he's just like, well, there's really nothing for me here. And it was at that point where Angel had also cut off ties with him after him borrowing money from her and you know, blowing all of her money away.
It
was a lot of money. It wasn't like $100. He blew a lot of Angel's money.
Yeah, it was $10,000. The way that both Daniel Deming and Polly handle money, like, I thought that was really interesting. Like, they both had debts, right? They both had to deal with debt. They both had to deal with scrounging and doing the best they can. And they both had to sacrifice. Like, he had to sacrifice his friendship with Angel to stay afloat, whereas Polly needed to sacrifice her freedom to raise Deming. And just the way that the two sides, like one coming from survival, one coming from a place of like privilege, both had like similar issues with like never having enough money.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And even with all the privileges of being adopted by white parents, he still ended up in the same place.
I just saw it was more as like Deming's nihilism of just like, I've got nothing left except money, so I might as well blow that too.
I think it was also because in the beginning he was really good at gambling and it was like, oh, the one thing that like I feel like I can be extremely good at and like make me money.
Everyone's always good at gambling.
That's not
true. The same thing. Leon thought the same thing when they went to Atlantic City and he lost all her money.
Lesson of the story, gambling is bad.
No such thing as free money.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so
Daniel goes back to China after he finds out Leon's whereabouts and how like he could probably reconnect with his mother.
And this is after he tells his adoptive mother that he's been talking to, because he at this point he's talked to Polly twice over the phone.
Yeah.
So they reconnected.
It's really weird because I feel like we hear stories about adoptees going back to the motherland to kind of reconnect with their roots. But in Daniel's case, it's a very different circumstance,
yeah.
I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Well, I mean, Daniel was also
an older child adoptee. He was an older child adoptee, but he was also raised in China for his formative like years as a child. So he does have memories of China. He does have ties to it. But the thing is, like, when he goes back to China, like, even though he's speaking in Chinese, people are like, oh, like, yeah, your Chinese isn't that great.
I mean, a big part of that is that he doesn't fit in China too. Although he feels more at peace there. And I mean, I have similar experiences going back. When I go back to Taiwan, I speak in the Mandarin to get by. I don't need a translator. I don't need, like, I can fit in and survive as long as I want, but everyone always hear the accent in my Chinese. There is a very Asian American part of this that's, you know, not belonging really anywhere. Like, you're going to be in between in the States and also in the mother country, because you've changed. Like, the moment you leave the home country, you start becoming something else. The moment he started living with the Wilkinsons, he started becoming another person. Right? He started becoming Daniel. Mm-hmm. And this is the same thing with Polly. The moment she arrives in New York, she goes from Palan to Polly. She starts seeing Polly as like a different person, like an aspirational version of herself that's free to do whatever.
Right.
And then when she goes back to Fuzhou, she becomes a different version of Polly.
Yeah, right? She changes her last name from Polly Guo to Polly.
Yeah, can we just quick recap on what she's doing in China?
So she is the director of an English school, right? And she's become wealthy.
Is she married? I thought she was like engaged.
She's married. They got married.
Oh, they got married. Yeah. Okay.
All I remember is she didn't tell him anything.
Yeah, well, because to become an English teacher, she lied and said, oh, I worked in the States as a teacher or as a student. Right. So she's still living not as her. She's still living as someone else.
She's living as like a like a different version of herself, like a better version that she's kind of concocted in her mind. So fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before she, fakes it till she makes it, like, she's in this detention camp for how many years? Like, it's
14 months.
Okay. And
yeah,
like, the thing is, like, I didn't expect that. Like, I expected maybe a chapter of her being at a detention camp and then just kind of quickly moving on to like her being deported and her trying to like reconnect back with Deming. But really, like, those chapters about like the detention camp and like the facilities there and how like she had no resources, and when it was her quote-unquote trial, it wasn't a trial. And
yeah,
and like her, like, I don't think she had a lawyer, because with these kind of proceedings, it's not under the judicial branch. So you're not entitled to a lawyer to represent you. So like that was really hard to read. And it was just,
I mean, it goes back to what we were saying about how the way that people view immigrants in this country is very much as not as people, but as statistics and as criminals, really, a lot of time. And the cold way that they're treated, even though they are mothers and sisters, people with families, is honestly echoed in the latest headlines. Like you see stories about, you know, children that were separated from their families at the border while their parents are being detained. You hear stories about ICE making up evidence to try to deport people.
Yeah, even like the the place that Polly worked at in the Bronx was like at a nail salon, and you know, who could forget that New York Times like feature about undocumented immigrants working in terrible conditions at nail salons, and like how so many of them got deported because of a raid, and like we said, like this kind of story is not like it's never going away. It's America, like. We have always been a country of immigrants, and problems like this will always exist. But it's kind of horrifying how this book is based on a 2009 article, right?
Yeah.
This book came out last year, and we are reading it a year after it came out, and it is still shocking. It is still relevant.
I mean, isn't that the reason why books like this exist, is to give, like... Media arts is all about telling stories or telling narratives, and the kind of art that we, you know, cover in this book club, and you know, through our work in the community, is all about representative media. And part of that is putting a face, putting a story behind things that people don't think about. You know, like this is the personal story of one of those cases, and you have to realize that. This isn't unique to just Polly and Daniel. This is like, this happens to every single person that has been either detained or deported or separated. This happens to each and every one of them.
And it is horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, it's horrifying enough to like face deportation, but like to be trapped in a place where like, like you're in squalor pretty much, like that is terrible. And like, it's really sad that, like, not much has changed in the number of years. And
I mean, even like another parallel between Polly and Daniel is that they both had to become someone else in order to survive, right? Mm-hmm. They maybe became Daniel to accept this new life. And Polly Guo became Polly Lin, the English teacher, to move on.
Speaking of moving on, like... She, like, didn't look back after she landed in China. Like, she didn't try to reconnect with Daniel. Like, at least according to my memory, it's been a while. But
yeah,
she really like made a clean break after she landed.
Because I just read this chapter. Like, she took the job teaching English to make money to go back to New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
but I do remember like her. And Leon and Vivian all saying at some point that you were adopted by like a wealthy pair of like white professors. Mm-hmm. Like they could provide so much. So it just felt like you were already set up for happiness. So why would I intrude?
Yeah, they thought Daniel was living the life.
I think that was...
And Vivian was so ashamed of what she'd done that she didn't want to find him again.
Yeah. I mean, that was Leon and Vivian's. Like, that's. I don't think that's what they thought. That's what they wanted to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And same with Polly. I think part of what made Polly like give up is meeting Leon again and hearing that Damon was adopted. Because all of a sudden, it became like her dream of coming back and reuniting became out of reach.
Yeah.
Yeah. She probably felt hella replaced.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, she already had a bond with her child. I mean, she raised her kid for a long time.
I mean, she was super mad that his name was changed. Like,
yeah, how did you feel about that? By the way, we talked about it earlier, but I don't think you said anything specific about it, Lily. Like, how did you feel when the Wilkinsons changed? His name from Deming to Daniel.
Well, now that we've talked about it and we've gone more into like the Wilkinsons, like whatever, they're well intentions, they're misinformed well intentions. Now I'm not 100% like as behind it, because I get, at first I get what they were trying to do is like, you are our son now and this is what that's gonna mean.
This is my swamp.
It's total identity erasure and stuff like that. Like obviously this is something that I've talked about or I've thought about as a transracial adoptee is like, you look at my name, Lily Rugo, and people don't know or won't immediately assume I'm Asian based on my last name. Some people think I'm Filipina if they see me and they can't figure out how my last name fits. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I was adopted as a baby, so it made more sense for my parents to kind of rename me, I guess. But then my Chinese first name is one of my middle names, like my legal middle name. So like, it's still there. And when I go to like Chinese classes, I use it. So it makes more sense, I guess, depending on what age they are. There was a little bit about like, we're renaming you Daniel because like, it's kind of like Deming, but we can't pronounce your Chinese one. So here you go.
I didn't even think about the pronunciation part. If we can't pronounce
Deming, I can imagine his like well-to-do suburbanite parents were like, oh.
It would have been okay if Lisa had written it in pinyin so we can like at least know the intonations.
That's true.
Or at least we would have seen the characters once.
Like I know like Lily wrote this blog post where she wrote about her thoughts with the Leavers and also Little Fires Everywhere and Two Hummingbirds. I forgot the title. The Lisa C book.
Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane.
Yes.
And
like I read Little Fires Everywhere, so I can actually talk about that. But in Little Fires Everywhere, there's a Chinese baby who is about to be adopted into a white family. And they do change her name as well. Like, how did you...
Yeah.
Like, do you have a different feeling for that compared to Deming being renamed Daniel? Because they're two totally opposite scenarios, I think.
Yeah, they're two totally different scenarios because the one in Celeste Ng's novel in Little Fires Everywhere is... It's, again, an impoverished Chinese immigrant mother can't take care of her baby, and she's struggling with postpartum depression. So she gives up her baby thinking it's the only best thing she can do. And I think in that book, the adoptive parents don't know the baby has a name. I don't think she was left with a name.
Okay.
So that one made a little bit more sense. And then Tea Girl, Hummingbird, Lisa C book, was another situation where the baby didn't have a name, so she was renamed to like Haley something something, like Haley standard white last name. So Deming is the only one where it's like clear erasure, and the others are just like, you're our baby now, so we're going to rename you or going to name you.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so two completely different scenarios when it comes to renaming and re-identifying.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like... As educated people, the Wilkinsons should have been more aware, I feel like. But I think they were also trying to, like, because in their eyes, they did save Daniel from a life of poverty and crime from the city, right? They assumed that his mother had left him, had abandoned mm-hmm. him.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, everything they do is well-meaning. But in that, like, really gentrifying, privileged way of, like, this is the right way, this is a better way. Like, and, yeah, I guess it is kind of that white savior thing where, you know, providing charity is seen as heroic. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hang on, I had another thought.
Yeah.
The other thing I've seen a lot about this kind of stuff is that, like, this is, yeah, kind of going along with the white savior thing is just, like, by... us as the adoptive parents giving you a new name and giving you our last family name, that is how we're like, that's so you never doubt that you're our child, you know? Like, that's how they want to make sure that you know that, like, you shouldn't have to question if you belong with us because we are giving you our family name and we're naming you again type thing, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I've seen some parents explain it. So again, like, well-intentioned but still identity erasure. Yeah. Like, for the longest time, I didn't know I had a Chinese last name. I just thought I had a first name. And then I found out I had a first and last name. Lord knows who named me, but I have one.
And I think there was a scene before Daniel goes back to China where his dad, Peter, was telling him all about, like, the family history and how, like, his great-grandpappy Wilkinson, like, something about ox bone or ox something.
Yeah.
And then in his head, in Daniel's head, he was thinking, this is great and all, like, but looking at, like, this portrait and realizing that his great-grandfather would have never accepted him as part of the family back then.
Racist grandpa.
Since
we did mention, like, briefly about Polly kind of not being the greatest mother in the world, the reason why she sends Deming back to China is because she can't take care of him, right? She can't do her full-time seamstress job while, like, taking care of an infant. And there is a moment where she, when she tries to abandon him at
the park.
There's
also,
yes.
I mean, that's also comes right after her trying to bring him to work and making it work.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Like I said, necessity and freedom is, like, it's all blurred together. Like, some people might see it as selfish. It's like, oh, how can you, like, mm-hmm. leave your child like that? Even though eventually she does the right thing of
Going back.
I don't know if you can even say that is the right thing because people's opinions can differ. But she, like, it's not even like, oh, I can't take care of him, so I want to leave him. But, like, with Polly, it was just like, he is tying me down. I can't go mm-hmm. anywhere I please. Like her freedom is limited by Deming. And the thing is, like, she can have her freedom by leaving him to be found and to be eventually adopted. But that freedom comes with the price, and she doesn't want to pay that price. So eventually she goes back and takes Deming, but...
Was he left in, like, a public,
well-trafficked
spot?
He was left...
I thought she just left him by a bench.
Yeah,
along the river, I think.
Yeah, yeah. She, like, left him by, like, a city bench.
But I think at the same time, her feeling trapped in lack of freedom didn't come until later when Demi was growing up. I think during that time, it was... Her main conflict was the fact that she couldn't take care of an infant and also work. And if she can't work, then she can't pay off her debt. If she can't pay off her debt, then she gets murdered by loan sharks.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's complicated. Yeah. Like, Polly is a very complex character. And, you know, at times she is really unlikable. But
I mean, we keep saying unlikable, but I think...
You don't have to like her.
Yeah, I mean, like, I found her unlikable. Let me say that. Like, that is my personal take on her. And like, that was fine. Like, I thought she was a great character in the book. And, you know, people are complex and people have their flaws. And that doesn't mean that they're terrible people. I just did not like her.
Mm-hmm. I like the parts where she's narrating how Demi was growing up and kind of seeing him as... Like, just realizing that he's kind of a dick as a child. Like, he would eat the biggest piece of candy. He would, like, boss people around. He'd be lazy and not try in school. And her, like, questioning, like, what part of me is rubbing off on him? Or, like, all the worst parts of me is rubbing off on him. Or he inherited all this, like, stuff from me.
Yeah, but, like, I wanted to bring up that, like... city bench scene because I think mm-hmm. it like really showed her character because like when she's turning away from him she says run before I change my mind and mm-hmm. you see what is going through her mind and just like all of the different choices and all the different consequences.
Yeah, like another so a lot of the story to me was also like setting up how a big reason why Polly left for the United States and not even left to go to the big city was because she did not want to follow what the plan was. Like she knew what was expected of her. She was to get married, have kids, take care of the house while her husband lived in the village. But mm-hmm. she wanted to go to the factory to have more agency in her life and to, you know, send like make more money to send home like making the money and sent home was the reason she gave her father, but she wanted the freedom. Mm-hmm. The reason she wanted to go to the States is because she knew if she had the baby, like her, the baby's father would claim it. She would have to marry him and have to become the wife and follow that path. So she left.
Yeah.
Same thing with Daniel. Daniel didn't want to be who his parent, his adoptive parents wanted him to be. So he left. The same reason, part of the same reason why he left China after he reunites with his mother, because his mother was already planning for him to take over the English school.
Yeah.
And that was like just very uncomfortable for him.
Yeah. I don't know. That was my main issue though. Cause like Rira said about how like she personally didn't like Polly much. I was sympathetic to Polly and all of her like intentions and her backstory. My main issue with her is that she kept leaving even at the end in like the grand epilogue. When you found out like Deming is doing kind of okay, you found out that his mom like up and fucking left again.
Well, the book is called The Leavers for a reason.
I know.
This book is split between Daniel and Polly, but honestly, I think Polly steals the show in this book.
Yeah.
I think the word leavers definitely applies to her the most.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else? I feel like we covered so much.
I mean, going back to just how no one in this book is a model minority. And I think that's kind of refreshing.
It is really refreshing.
Yeah. So last thoughts, any last thoughts? Let's start with Lily.
I mean, I enjoyed The Leavers. I'm going to be that writer douche for a second and quote myself. But there was something I wrote in my blog post that kind of summed up how I feel about it. Let me find it. It was, I don't know what I was looking for in it, but I found something to hold on to. That's just generally how I feel about this book.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way because I went in expecting one type of story and came out with a entirely different type of story. And you do end up like rooting for them to at least find some measure of peace, because the characters in this book get like screwed by life hard.
Yeah, you would think that this was a very depressing book, and to some degree it does get pretty depressing, but there's a lot of like dark humor to it that I really appreciated. And also just this book really subverted all of my expectations. So like on that merit alone, I like really enjoyed this book, because after, I don't want to brag, but I read a lot of books. Like, I read a lot of books, and it is very, very difficult for me to actually be surprised by, like, narrative choices, I guess, like, yeah, storytelling choices. And I was consistently surprised throughout this book. So I enjoyed it, and I think I've said all of my thoughts in our discussion, so I don't have anything more to add.
So that'll do it for our discussion of The Leavers by Lisa Koh, our May Books and Boba Book Club pick. Thank you, Lily, for sitting in with us and discussing the book.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We immediately thought of you.
Always happy to be on the podcast.
Rira, what are we reading for June 2018?
For June 2018, we are reading Not Your Sidekick by C.B. Lee.
Yeah.
We're going back to genre fiction. How exciting.
As always, if you want to sound off on anything we discussed during this episode or about book news in Asian America in general, please join our Goodreads group. You can talk to us on the forums and share your thoughts as well. And yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And keep reading.
Bye. This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a podcast collective featuring Asian American hosted podcasts. If you enjoy Books and Boba, please check out one of our other great programs, such as Saturday School. Hosted by film journalists and scholars Ada Sang and Brian Hu, Saturday School is an Asian American history podcast featuring films and media from the Asian American canon. You can find Saturday School and the other great programs of the Potluck Collective by going to our website at www.podcastpotluck.com.